You have 10:15. Having arrived, we will call the House Tax Committee meeting to order. We will actually take care of some administrative details when we have a quorum, and hopefully we'll get some members arriving here quite soon. The order, members, if you could take out your agenda, we're going to go, members of the committee will be last. We'll work through visitors to the committee, which is the bulk of the agenda today. The first bill up will be House File 2283, a McElfatrick bill, and then we'll go to a Norness bill. And then, are we actually going to hear Mahoney bill?
Yep.
Mahoney bill?
That's tradition.
House File 1876. Fine piece of legislation, I'm sure. And then the fourth will be McFarland bill, House File 1113, and then fifth is House File 1242, Representative Depke, who is a member of the Tax Committee. So with that, we will start. Representative McElfatrick, if you could please join us. Okay, when we have a quorum, I will move House File 2283 for Representative McElfatrick. So members, we're not going to go in the order of the agenda, but it'll be McElfatrick, Norness, Mahoney, McFarland, Depke. So House File 2283. Are there any amendments here? Okay. So I will move this when we have a quorum. So if you could please present your bill, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee.
Good morning.
Thank you for allowing me to present the bill here this morning. I'm speaking on behalf of a very small town in Aiken County. They've had a serious ongoing problem with their sewer system. They acted on rather poor advice from a USDA engineer and installed a sewer system that was not appropriate for their needs. Subsequently, the contractor that installed the system declared bankruptcy, and so they were left with a substandard system that was not only inappropriate for their needs, but was also prone to repeated breakdowns. For years, the town has struggled to maintain the system, and the monthly charge per hookup was underrepresented to them in the beginning, and they have been forced to raise their rates multiple times. This is difficult for a town of 94 people with an average annual per capita income of just over $19,000. A quarter of the 55 or so hookups in the town are already delinquent in their payments for their sewer service. The town has actually done what I think is a remarkable job of funding this problematic system. Their loans are paid off. However, the operational costs are consuming all their LGA and property taxes. And in addition to that, they still have a shortfall every year of between $9,000 and $15,000. The town's reserves are nearly exhausted, and without some relief, they will face bankruptcy before the end of this calendar year. This is a situation where a town acted on advice that should have been reliable, and they had the misfortune to hire a contractor that did a poor job for them. Despite their best efforts to carry their own weight, it just simply is not possible for them to continue. There are rare situations, I believe, in which the state needs to take responsibility to provide relief for their people in exceptional circumstances. The modest dollar amount in this bill will give them the opportunity to essentially take a breath and look ahead to the inevitable, which is they're going to need a new system before too many years. So with that, thank you for taking this into consideration.
Thank you, Representative McElfatrick. I will officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. We do have a quorum. Representative Knuth moves the minutes of March 1st. Any additions or corrections? Mm-hmm. Well, she reads them. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Knuth. Okay, with that, I will move House File 2283 be recommended for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. Questions of Representative McElpatrick from committee members. Representative Giffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative McElpatrick, I have great sympathy for your small city, and I think that something like this we can support to help them in a bad situation. But I don't know that it's the state's responsibility, but I think the state can certainly, as we've done with some other things, help out in a unique situation. So looking forward to supporting this. Thank you.
Any other comments? Representative Biskins?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of questions. The first is, Representative McElpatrick, has the city made application for WIF funding? And if so, what's been the result of the comments and that application?
Representative McElpatrick?
I'm sorry, I didn't. For funding, I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, we do have grants to communities through wastewater infrastructure funding programs. This is state dollars that have been set aside specifically to help communities with wastewater issues. Has the community made WIF grant applications? And if so, what has been the comments made for the denial?
Representative McElpatrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. You know, to be honest, I cannot address that specific funding. All I know is that they have struggled looking for every possible source of funding that they could find over the past several years.
Representative Biskins.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And one additional question, Representative. By the testimony, this sounds like an ongoing problem, and yet the bill asks for one-time funding. Is this a Band-Aid on a wound that can't be healed? And isn't it better to sometimes just take the lumps and move forward? What is the plan in the future if we were to provide this one-time funding for these operational costs, which of course are ongoing? What is the plan for the future in this community?
Representative McElpatrick.
Mr. Chair and Representative, they have recently raised their rates. They're doing what they can to carry on with this particular system. They're approaching a time when they're going to look at an entire new system. So the goal here was to just give them a little respite so that they can begin to look ahead. They have raised their rates and are doing the best they can to cover it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Biskins. Okay, thank you, Representative Biskins. Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'm just trying to, it's not really a question for the author of the bill, but Mr. Chair, I'm trying to think about these and maybe our staff can help us. You know, we have done some of these sort of things for tough situations. Like I remember when the Boundary Waters area, is it called Ham something? I can't remember. But there was a Ham Lake. There was a fire. And Representative Drazkowski just left. He had a fire, and we did some stuff there. We've done some flooding, Browns Valley stuff, and we did some Winoman County had an issue where a bunch of land came off the tax rolls, and we've used different things. Sometimes it's a straight-up appropriation. Sometimes it's an LGA thing. Sometimes, you know, there's different things going on, but I'm trying to just recall if we've ever done anything quite like this, and maybe the staff can just help us kind of think about when we've used LGA, and I know there's been a few circumstances.
But. Thank you, Representative Lincheski. Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lincheski, actually the very second time that we made a kind of a grandfathered aid increase to cities was to a group of 24 cities who in 1992 or 1993 had sewer costs that exceeded their 1992 or 1993 levy amounts. So the very second one that we ever did out of the 35 we've done was specifically for sewer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mrs. Dalton. And Mr. Chair, I just hope you'll think about all, you know, if you put together a bill, kind of how you're going to approach this, and that there's a lot of other ways to achieve these goals that you have at your disposal, and maybe the author could work with you, because the precedent part gets complicated. I think Representative Biskin's line of questioning on that is good, because, you know, you're going to do this for every city, and I understand they had a contractor. It's really not, you know, that they're in a tough situation, but Just thoughts on, you know, because all of us who, all the taxpayers, all of our constituents pay for LGA, you know, we all pay for it. So it's really be like a gift from all the legislators here to your community. And so I think you just have to kind of think that through. And I don't know if you're, the process here, if these are bills that are going in the omnibus tax bill, or if we're going to have amendments on them all as we go through them, or what, you know, just process.
Well, Francesca, the intention would be to hear all the bills, not hear all the bills, we don't hear every bill, unlike former chairs that did a better job. We will hear many of the bills, and then we will decide through the committee process, we'll bring them back up for votes and try and assemble an omnibus tax bill. So that's what we want to do at this point, is get them heard so we can work through these and go from there. Representative Erickson. Thank you, Representative Lanchesco. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a question for Ms. Dalton. This section of law, I noticed, is you know, the city aid base subdivision. But how many exceptions are already in this section of law? It seems to me there are a few, which tells me this is maybe not precedent, though maybe in this manner, working with LGA. But this looks to me like a section of law that's filled with exceptions.
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, there have been 26 granted so far. So this would be a, no, I'm sorry, there's been 25 granted so far. This would be a 26th. Actually, I think there were like two more that have been, that were for very short term that have since been taken out. So I think there may be, you know, maybe 26 have been granted, 27.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question to Representative Marquardt. Are we still taking care of Monoman City and Monoman County through that transaction that occurred a few years ago with that land going into trust?
Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And Representative Erickson, yes.
Representative Erickson.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Marquardt, how many years is that in perpetuity?
Representative Marquardt or Ms. Dalton? Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I believe that one's in perpetuity, but I want to, I need to make a quick read through to make sure that that's true.
And I know, Mr. Chair, that that's the tax base that they lost.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is not unprecedented.
Ms. Schilt, could you answer the Erickson question, please? Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Erickson, Kathy Schill from House Fiscal. The answer to your question is yes, and you can see it on the budget spreadsheet.
Yes.
Every biennium, this will be the third biennium for the 12-13 time period. So, yes, and that appropriation is about $600,000 per year, broken up between the county, the city, and the school district. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions for Representative McElfatrick? If not, I will move that we lay House File 2283 over for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative McElfatrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Okay, item next, we will go to Representative Nornes. I will move House File 2161 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. Chair Nornes, welcome to the Tax Committee, sir. If you could please present your bill. And I should have asked, on the McElfatrick bill, was there anyone from the audience who wished to testify for or against? Because if you wanted to, it's too late. Unless you drove from Tamarack, then we would accept, we would go back. But, okay, we have before us House File 2161, and before we get into the description of this bill, is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify for this or has concerns? Okay, so there will be some other folks. So, Chair Nornes, if you could please present your bill, House File 2161, that is now before us.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a pretty straightforward bill. It's similar to a bill that I brought back in, I think, 2007. It benefited Scambler Township in Otter Tail County. This time it's brought to you by the community of Virgis, Minnesota. It has to do with imposing an aggregate materials gravel tax. And the current statute allows for this to happen as long as the county chooses not to. So the county is the first to be able to impose a tax, but since Otter Tail County wishes not to do that, then the community of Vergas is now asking for that. The tax would be 85% of the tax would go to roads and bridges, with 15% for restoration of the property. If the county decides later they'd like to impose a tax, then of course this would be null and void and would go away. That is basically what we're asking for.
Okay, and then you have someone like testify on behalf of your bill?
I have the mayor of the community of Vergas, Dean Harstick.
Your Honor, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Yeah. Honorable County Chair, my name is Dean Harstick, mayor of City of Vergas.
Can you please spell your last name?
H-A-A-R-S-T-I-C-K.
Thank you,
Harstick.
Sir. Yep. Please present your testimony.
We're in a lake area city, community, where many people come to visit with beautiful scenery and stuff around. And then the other thing is with the ability to tax would help a road situation and also to assure that everything is cleaned up as far as the time that the gravel pit is exhausted. It's just a simple request that we'd like to get so we can apply the tax to help our community.
Thank you, Your Honor. Any questions for the mayor? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mayor, do you have several pits or areas where you have aggregate so that you're going to be pulling from a lot of resources, or do you have one, and how many contractors do you have who haul from there?
Your Honor.
There's two contractors. There is one pit, but it's possible that other ones could be open because the area is kind of a gravelly area, so we don't know exactly. There's not been a test borings to see how much is there and that kind of thing, so I can't answer that.
Representative Erickson.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Biskins.
Mr. Chair, Mayor Arsenik, does Otter Tail County support or oppose this legislation?
They support.
Your Honor.
They support it.
Representative Biskins.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Mayor. If they support this legislation, and we already have an exemption in law for Scambler Township in Otter Tail County, why? What is the reason that the county commissioners are giving for imposing this tax themselves?
Your Honor. Hi, Chair Nornes.
The question is why the county chooses not to,
right.
Is that what I'm hearing?
Right.
Well, Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is the question, Representative Nornes, especially in light of the fact that the legislature has already given a township in Otter Tail County the ability to do this, and the fact that Otter Tail County itself supports this legislation. Why are they themselves imposing? What is the reason?
Current law allows them to do that. They choose not to. The Scambler authorization from 07, that pit is only lasted about 2 years, so they collected in 08 and 09, and that was the end of that. So this is the largest amount of gravel that I'm aware of in the county, and the county just chooses not to to get involved with this particular tax.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Nornes, I don't mean to impugn motive, and however, it does seem to strike me that we have county commissioners who want to run around saying they didn't raise taxes, but the legislature imposed it upon them.
I don't know.
I think,
Chair Nornes,
I think to clarify, the county is not paying the tax or collecting the tax. They're really sitting on the sidelines. The tax is going to be paid by Becker County or whoever is purchasing the gravel. And in most cases recently, it's been going to Becker County, where they have they actually have a countywide gravel tax.
Representative Biskins. Any other questions for the mayor or Chair Nornes on this bill? Okay, thank you, Your Honor. We do have someone that has concerns. If you could please come forward.
Thank you.
Please state your name for the record and who you represent, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Fred Corrigan. I'm executive director of the Aggregate and Ready Mix Association of Minnesota, which is a statewide organization.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There is a handout that I believe has been handed out to you. We are here today to oppose House File 2161. We have worked with the mayor and the author over the last couple of weeks to try to clarify some of the intent of why they need the tax. The association has worked with the Aggregate Resources Task Force in the laws of 1998 over 2 years to perfect a bill that was passed in the 80s. We believe that the statute attempts to create a fair and level playing field in the local marketplace by requiring aggregates to be taxed by a county imposing the tax when aggregates are imported to that county from a county not imposing the tax. While not creating a perfectly fair and level playing field on a regional level, this provision at least creates a fair and level playing field on a county level. We believe that allowing cities or towns to impose the tax when the county has opted not to was never an intent of the original law and places aggregate producers in the local marketplace on an grossly unfair and unlevel playing field. The bill is based on an exemption that was granted to 10 St. Louis County townships in 1997, specifically Subdivision 9. For purposes of exercising the powers contained in the section, the town is deemed to be the county. It is our reading of this provision that any town in agreeing to this provision is obligated to meet all of the requirements imposed on the counties imposing this tax. In fact, of the 10 counties and townships in St. Louis County, only Solway is currently imposing the tax, which distorts the Duluth market where mines from the other townships are not subject to the tax. The same language, whose town is deemed to be the county, was used when legislation authorized Scambler Township, as Representative Norns mentioned, in Otterdale County to impose the tax. Ironically, most of the aggregate materials being produced in the city of Vargas are currently being shipped to Becker County, where it pays the aggregate tax to Becker County under the imported provision. Legislative authorization for the city of Vargas to collect the aggregate tax would result in loss of revenue to Becker County, which meets all the provisions of Minnesota 298-75. The aggregate industry believes this is a good example of the legislative intent of this tax being met by aggregate producers. In this particular case in the city of Vargas, the aggregate producers are never using city roads. They're going on the county roads. In the case of Solway Township, the township does not share those dollars with the county road system. So, and in fact have used those proceeds for things other than the road fund. The lease that the current miners have on this property requires reclamation, so we're not sure why the city thinks it needs to create a reclamation fund when the lease on the property already covers that issue. Mr. Chair, you have the testimony, so I'm just going to skip over. The level of production in this property would probably generate about $600 a year for reclamation. The best I've seen is $4,000 an acre to reclaim a pit. So I don't think, again, the intent was, at least at the county level, you can generate enough revenue for the county to come into a city like Vargas and do reclamation with enough resources to do this. By our estimate, it would take something like 100 years of the city collecting this reclamation fee to actually being able to reclaim it. We do not believe the townships or small cities have the resources to properly administer this tax, whereas the county usually has both the resources and, as the permitting authority, the expertise to administer the tax collection and implement the reclamation of abandoned pits. Mr. Chair, you have more information before you, but I'd stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Corrigan. Isn't the main purpose of this for road repair and not reclamation?
Mr. Chair, it is, but when we looked at this with the Legislative Task Force in 1998 and 99, clearly there were abandoned pits and other needs that counties and cities had to reclaim abandoned products. So we went from 10 to 15% of this tax, increased the amount of tax to cover that, and also increased the amount of tax that the township or city collects and receives from this tax. So we agree that the industry creates a burden on local government. We met the legislative intent in 98 and 99 to give the local unit of the government enough resources to deal with both its road and bridge accounts, which is 85% of the resources, as well as recognizing that there were some abandoned pits that would need county support.
Questions for Mr. Corrigan? Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Do you want to wrap up, Representative Norton?
Only by saying, I guess this only authorizes, it says that the city may, they will then have the option as to how they proceed once the authority is given to them. And I think they'll also admit that the amount of money that you're talking about is not a large amount of money, but for a community of about 300, it's meaningful. So I'll leave it up to the committee to decide. And the intent is to hold this over, is that?
Yeah, the motion is to lay it over for possible inclusion in omnibus tax, but we won't be voting on it today.
Okay. That's all I have to say, Mr. Chair.
Okay,
I appreciate
I'll renew my motion, House File 2161 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. I'd like to thank the Mayor of Burgess for coming and Mr. Corrigan. Thank you, Chair Norris. Okay, item next, Mahoney Bill. House File, I take great pleasure in moving House File 1876 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. An omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Mahoney, for bringing this bill forward. If you could please present your bill, and members, we're on House File 1876.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Fine piece of legislation.
Members of the committee, yes, it's a fine piece of legislation, Mr. Chair. I learned that from somebody around here. This bill extends House File 1876. It extends the law authorizing the City of St. Paul's Capital Improvement Bonding Program from 2013 to 2024. It also increases the limit from $20 million to $30 million per year. It requires a vote of the City Council to implement these. Before I get too deep in the weeds, I'm going to let the my testifier bring forth any more information and answer any questions.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Sarah Erickson with the City of St. Paul. House File 1876, which is in front of you today, is the City of St. Paul's Capital Improvement Budget, or CIB program. We use this program in the city to bond for publicly owned infrastructure. Some examples of buildings and things that we have used, we've used it for community warning siren systems, Fire Station Number 22 Edition, 35E and Cayuga reconstruction, Central Corridor projects. We've had this authority since 1971, and it sunsets every 10 years. So we are back requesting two changes in law. One, to extend the authority an additional 10 years. It's set to expire in 2013, and increase the amount of bonding authority from $20 million to $30 million. The authority has been at $20 million since 2003. These changes will help facilitate updates to critically needed community buildings and public safety assets in the city, and I will answer any questions.
Any questions for Ms. Erickson or Sam Gottwald?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This might be a question for a testifier, maybe one of our experts, and I'm going to plead the dumb question piece. Why is the state telling St. Paul what its bonding authority is?
Ms. Erickson, why is the state doing that?
I think it goes back to 1971. Because in 1971, you decided that.
Mr. Chair, I knew somebody would know the history here, but I don't know it. So I'm asking the dumb question.
I think somebody does, though.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gottwald, there's a long history to this that predates me, but part of it.
Weren't they chiseling at tablets at that time, Mr. Chair? You don't have to answer that question.
Goes back, but just to sort of explain the dynamics of what's going on, St. Paul had some problems with their debt level, and they came to the they had a task force, if I recall right, that sort of set up this program, and they came to the legislature and had the legislature sort of enacted for them. And initially, part of the problem was that St. Paul had a lot of what's called overlapping debt, so that when you added the debt of the city, the county, the school, and the Port Authority and so forth, it was a very high level. And this law is originally written had limits that were based on those overlapping debt levels, and that restricted their ability to issue bonds beyond that. And in some ways, I think it was where they were coming to the state at one level to ask the state to sort of put this structure in place to sort of send a message to the market that they weren't going to bond above a certain level. But the second thing that's important about this is this allows them, contrary to the general rules that would normally apply either under 475 or under their charter, they're allowed to issue these bonds without going to the voters to have them approved. So originally there's this sort of trade-off that was going on where they were sort of subject to these special restrictions that were, depending upon the amount of debt in the county and the school in return for not going to the voters because they had had excessive debt before that. But it's largely now they're doing it so that they don't have to get voter approval for it.
Tim Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Michael or perhaps one of our testifiers, is this being done for any other cities of the first class? I mean, do we do this generally, or
every city?
They all have the same. Okay,
Mr. Michael.
No.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gottwald, there is a general capital improvement bonding law for cities that's very limited in scope and would not, and is a relatively recent enactment. Both Minneapolis and St. Paul, I don't know about Duluth, do not generally go to the voters to have their city bonds approved the way, you know, some suburban and smaller communities typically do. So I think it's sort of consistent with the practice that goes on, but, you know, you can have a home rule charter that grants you this authority, too. St. Paul's home rule charter does not grant them that authority.
Representative
Gottwald?
No,
thank you.
Representative Paymar?
Well, Mr. Chair, just to add, unless I have this wrong, but the CIB committee, there's a CIB committee that's created in the city of St. Paul made up of residents of the city that look at all of these different potential bonding proposals. They make recommendations. It then goes to the city council and the mayor. That also there's a number of steps in place there, so I didn't want to leave the impression that the community is not involved at all by the fact that they're not voting on individual projects.
Thank you, Representative Paymar. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, in light of the crippling reductions that this legislature has imposed upon the city of St. Paul with LGA changes, how can we then, as legislators, comfortably approve an increase in the city's principal debt limit by a third again above what it currently is in law?
Representative Mahoney, Representative Biskins.
I think he's asking me, yes,
Representative Mahoney. Chair,
by a simple majority vote. Or the whim of the chair, whichever.
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you, and Representative Mahoney, but I am very serious. I mean, we've heard over and over and over again how devastating the actions of this legislature has been to the city of St. Paul. They've had to cut fire. They've had to cut police. They've had to cut back on city services, sewer, water, etc., et al. And yet here we are asking the legislature to approve an increase in their debt service by $10 million and to do so without going to the voters. How can I justify that?
Mr. Chair.
Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins. It is likely one of the only ways that the city of St. Paul can move forward. We do need resources. We need financial resources to move our city forward, whether it's to and I haven't spoken to the mayor about this yet, but the new fire station that's needed in my district or any of the particular projects that the citizens board that Representative Paymar referenced, which is an 18-member board represented by all the people across the city, that's one of the many ways that we need to have to move forward.
Representative Biskins.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Mahoney, I guess I'll struggle with this and continue to, but if the reduction, the revenue coming into the city is a zero-sum game, and if the reduction in revenue in LGA caused such devastation to city police, fire, public safety, etc., then I would think that if we further reduce that pot by putting more to debt service, we are further exacerbating the public safety issues of the residents of St. Paul. And it would be something I would be concerned with.
Thank you, Representative Biskens. Okay. Representative Rukavina.
Chair, to this point, and
not to this point. We don't do to this point. You have the floor, sir.
Oh, thank you. To the point anyhow, but I thank you. Representative Biskens, as a seasonal resident of the city of St. Paul, and I've made it now finally in my 26th year to Summit Street, I might add. But on behalf of the city as a seasonal resident, I accept your apology to the
Summit
city of
Avenue,
St. Paul.
Representative Rukavina? You mean Summit Avenue?
Yes. And Summit Beer, too, Representative Rockwell. But you know, the crippling effects were vetoed by the governor when the Republican caucus tried to take all the LGA away from St. Paul. So on behalf of St. Paul as a seasonal resident, thank you, Representative Biskens, for your apology.
Thank you, I think. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Erickson, what if we were to allow the extension but keep the amount at $20 million? Could you comment on what the downside would be of that?
Ms. Erickson?
It's the priority of the city that these authority be extended. If the legislature is not comfortable extending the debt amount, that will be a public policy decision that you have to make. That dollar amount has been at $20 million since 2003, so it's been there for 10 years, and we're asking for an increase based on that.
Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Ms. Erickson, does that mean that you wouldn't be able to do the fire station in Representative Mahoney's district?
Ms. Erickson? I think you should just do that.
Yeah.
I do too.
Like Representative Mahoney, I've not talked to the mayor about that. So.
She's good. Good. Representative Erickson?
No, I'm finished. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Erickson, so under today's St. Paul budget, what's their current debt service as a percentage? And then if we raise it to $30 million and 5, 6, 7 years out, what's the level going to be?
Do we need to bring down the rock star?
I have our deputy finance director here for technical questions if he wants to come down.
Let's bring him down, please.
He would like to be referred to as Rock God.
And Mr. Chair, if I could just add to that, so we have the city council approving by a vote of 5-7, mm-hmm. 5 of 7, these projects. Can you give an example, maybe, or think of a couple where they said no, and how responsibly is all this going on?
Yeah.
If you could please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Sure. For the record, I'm John North. I work with the City of St. Paul.
Welcome,
Deputy
committee,
Director,
sir.
Of Finance. As for the second question, there are examples of some of the CIB projects being reprioritized off the list, quite frankly. Again, as was mentioned earlier, there is a CIB representation of residents, and then they make those recommendations up to the governing body.
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have an example? One that
off
moved
the top,
off the list?
Mr. Chair, I can at least give one.
Representative Mahoney.
There was a historic bridge, Mr. Chair and Representative Runbeck. There was a historic bridge restoration in Phelan Keller Regional Park that the city participated in. It took 3 years of coming back with different scrunching numbers down a little bit. So finally, the CIB said yes. So there was 3 no's and a yes.
Representative Runbeck.
Same project.
All right, thank you.
I can give some too if you'd like.
Did you have a question regarding where we're at right now on the limits?
Debt service as a percent of total budget now, and what's the maximum it's going to get to?
Mr. North?
Mr. Chair, let me approach it this way. Since 2006, as Sarah's already alluded to, we've had this since 1971. And since 2006, we have unused authorization of about $78 million. And I guess the reason I bring this up is that St. Paul has proven that we're good stewards of this flexibility. For the capital markets right now, for the bondholders, it's important that issuers, cities, state governments, and so forth, have flexibility to meet their capital needs. And I think St. Paul has proven that we're good stewards of that with this unused authorization. What this provides is inflationary buffer. Because we come back not until another 10 years, really the increase is there to provide for any inflationary buffer.
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm like Representative Gottwald, I wasn't actually understanding how all of this works. And if I could maybe just ask staff, just to be clear, so we have a section of law on the books here in Minnesota that allows the city of St. Paul to get out from under its own home rule charter and authorize debt without going to the voters at a general or special election. And so we're increasing that that kind of home rule charter, not repeal, but we're abridging it or going around it with this bill. And so just a question. So the city could still actually bond for more than $20 million if they did it through the traditional home rule charter provision, which would require the simple majority by the council and voter approval at a general election. So they could still bond without this, but they'd have to go through their traditional mechanism.
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, that's correct. They could. Within the general other limits, like the net debt limits and so forth, that apply under state law to all cities.
Representative Downey.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then for staff, how many other cities has the state come in and gone around their home rule charter and done this? Is it just St. Paul, or are there other cities as well?
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, I don't know the answer to that, but there are, I guess I would characterize it as a fair number of exceptions that the legislature over the years has enacted. Some of them are general in nature, where it's, you know, multiple city charters, and some of them it's just specifically, you know, individual charters.
Representative Downey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. We're not voting on this today, so I can learn more. But, boy, I'm not sure why we'd, as a state, come down into the city of St. Paul and empower their city council to take on more debt without voter approval when the council can go out. They got $78 million of debt capacity that they haven't even utilized yet, and so why we'd come in and give them another $10 million a year on top of all of that without having to go to the voters, given the property tax climate in St. Paul. And I'm not sure that this makes a lot of sense, especially when they can go out to their voters and get the money if the voters want it. Maybe it's easier to come down here and get it at the legislature, but I think they'd be better off going to the public to get it.
Professor Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, and I just listening to Representative Downey, maybe Mr. North or Nord, I didn't catch the name, sorry. I don't know that $78 million is sitting there. I mean, I heard that as, you know, over the years we've foregone, say, $2 million a year and $5 million a year and $4 million a year, and we get up to a number. So that's not probably sitting around for them to use, or I doubt Representative Mahoney would have this bill. But I will say on this issue of, I think Representative Gottwald got the right question, is, you know, just the committee. Cities and counties and schools can't do anything without our approval. I mean, they're not ahead of the legislature. They have to come here and ask us, so we're really in charge of this decision. They're political creatures of the state. And so this committee decides whether or not we have things like TIF or debt at all, or let them abate taxes, or when they have to have an election, or when they have to have a reverse referendum, and all the truth and taxation hearings. Those are all decided by this committee and the Senate Tax Committee, and so all cities and counties and townships have to live by our rules unless we give them an exception. And I think the thing, thinking about this whole debt issue, Mr. Chair, I'd encourage you to think about the whole state as you consider the St. Paul issue, because you know, you really do. Again, you set a precedent when you decide if you're going to, I think the extension is one thing, the bigger price tag is another thing, and I think that the questions that are being raised are relevant to, you know, really understanding their particular budget situation. But, you know, this gets me to, Mr. Chair, wondering if you're going to have a public finance bill, because maybe I missed a bill, but this is the first public finance bill we've heard this year. And you know, generally the chair and the committee assembles a public finance bill And if you're kind of opening the omnibus tax bill this year to now public finance bills, I think there's more that, you know, that we should get our heads around. But, just listening to Mr. Michael, and for members, I think we've not only given exemptions that, like Representative Downey was raising, to the rule on a city-by-city basis, and we've expanded debt capacity for local units of government, whether it's counties, schools, or cities, with or without votes. We've also done them for projects, just actually projects. Like, so, for example, I think the Twins got to be, all their debt got to be not counted in the debt limit. I think the Mall of America got all their debt to be not counted. So, there's a lot going on than just did this city get to have a special treatment. We've got projects like the Mall of America, the Twins. I'm sure the Vikings bill will have an exemption to the debt limit for the city that that's located in. So, there's a lot of public finance issues swirling around in this bill, and Representative Mahoney is just doing his thing for his city. That's all. He's just trying to help his city. But I do think if you're going to have a public finance article in the omnibus tax bill, I hope we'll have a broader discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lanchesky. A couple points there. First of all, the next two bills coming up are both public finance bills, and then there's one on Thursday. To your other question, though, could you, Mr. North, maybe clarify the $78 million figure? I think Representative Lanchesky is correct on that, where that's just not sitting there. You can go up to that amount.
Mr. Chair, that is correct. We are authorized on an annual basis to issue up to $20 million. Any unused authorization is not carried over. So it's a use it or lose it authorization. And so to that, I can certainly spend time going over the dollar amounts over the last 5 years or so of unused capacity. But again, since 2006, we've had unused authorization in excess of $78 million.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. North. Any questions for the author or Ms. Erickson or Mr. North? Okay, with that, I'll renew my motion that House File 1876 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill, tax bill. Thank you, Mr. North. Thank you, Ms. Erickson. And thank you, Mr. Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Okay, item next, we go to McFarland. House File, I will move House File 1113. Representative McFarland, if you could please present your bill, what you're trying to accomplish here. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm bringing forward House File 1113 for you today. It is about repealing the expiration date for the Ramsey County Mortgage and Deed Taxing Authority. I have with me Commissioner Ramsey County Commissioner Janice Rettman, who can really present this so much better with much more enthusiasm than I can. So I'd like to introduce her.
Okay. Before we do that, is there anyone else that wishes to testify on behalf of this bill, in favor of this bill? Okay. Anyone that would like to testify with concerns? Okay. We do have someone with some concerns. Okay. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Yes, my name is Janice Rettman. I'm a Ramsey County Commissioner.
Welcome to the committee, Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, I hope I live up to the expectation of Representative McFarland. My name is Janice Rettman. I'm Ramsey County Commissioner and also the Chair of the Housing Redevelopment Authority. I am joined here today also by the HRA staff, Denise Begbedier and Mary Lou Egan, just in case you have questions. On behalf of the Ramsey County Board of Commissioners, we are respectfully asking to continue to use the HERF, the Environmental Response Fund, in a manner that the original legislation envisioned. The original legislation stated, the county shall seek matching funds from contaminated cleanup funds, like deed, Met Council, federal government, the private sector, and other sources. In order to carry out the intent and the spirit of the legislation, the Ramsey County Board and staff did not impose the fee until we were ready to be ready with specifics. Number one, the IRF dollars would be the last in dollars to a project where all private and public and other private and other cleanup dollars were already secured, and the developer had site control and the dollars ready to be used on the property to create full-time jobs or housing and create tax base. Secondly, the IRF would be only used for environmental cleanup, and it will be last in. Three, the administration of the IRF funds would be minimal and is currently running at less than 1%. And fourth, the IRF dollars would be split 50-50 as equally as possible between the developments in the suburbs and the city of St. Paul. At your desk and or being passed out, I think it was passed out, a brochure showing some of the properties that we have partnered in. In the legislation, the first priority that was identified was the St. Paul site known as the Max and Steel Dale Street Shops, located between Como, Dale, Front, Minnehaha, and Western Streets on the two sides of the Great Northern Railroad track. The legislation stated this land was blighted and that cleanup will lead to living wage jobs and improve the land for economic development. I personally will take you to that site come day, night, 24/7, because I want you to see that site. You would see thriving jobs. And for the testimony for Representative McFarland, I received the most current information on those two sites through 2011. The private real estate investment on those two sites has now totaled over $27.5 million. 15.8 plus $450,000 equipment investment on the previously tax forfeited Max and Steel site, and $11,875,000 plus an additional $450,000 for equipment investment was invested on the Dale Street Shop site. The Max and Steel site, the development saves 355 jobs and are adding in the first 10 years of being on the site at least 200 new jobs. On the Dale Street Shops, 260 jobs were saved and 130 new jobs will be created in the first 10 years. Of those new jobs, 70% will be drawn and recruited from the neighborhood. Ramsey County believes without the IRF, we could not have achieved this success. I believe this IRF charge has lived up to what it's being about. Jobs, adding tax base, and increased market value. What we are most proud of in Ramsey County is that the municipalities have seen the real live work of IRF in their communities. I personally know the impact it has had on the North End, South Como, and Frogtown area. This legislation is not the end all or the be all, but I believe with all my heart that this tiny part of the mortgage deed registration fee is a working fee that does exactly what you wanted it to do and what Ramsey County wanted it to do: create jobs, good housing, and good tax base. We respectfully request you to remove the sunset and let us continue to use the IRF as originally envisioned. I thank you very much for your time in hearing the bill, and Representative McFarland.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. And members, this is the Ramsey County bill. The next one is a Hennepin County bill, so kind of same type of issues. The bills are a little bit different. We have several questions here. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just curious, Ramsey County, how much have they applied for as far as like the Brownsfields? I know there's several different funds that we have available as a state. And how much have you received from the state to clean up these different areas from all those different pots that we have within the state? And how far back does that go? Does it go beyond the 1997 when this authority was first granted? Can you just give me a little bit of history on that, please?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, if you notice on this document here, if you have it in front of you, the receipts that we've been coming in, I will give you one example, and maybe the staff can give more example, but on the insert right here.
And members, this should be in your packets.
You should have an insert that shows you exactly. For example, in the city of Little Canada, deed put in $150,000, the Met Council TBRA funds put in $50,000, the IRF put in $31,000. So in terms of the leveraging of contaminated other dollars, all of these sites, we have over 2,000 acres in Ramsey County that are polluted in some shape, form, or the other. This document will show you all of the projects of what else has been achieved in terms of the contaminated dollars.
And Commissioner, you're talking about the Ramsey, the insert Ramsey County Environmental Response Fund Project Summary 1, yeah. 1 of 12?
Yes, sir.
Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And then members, you have this, the Ramsey County Environmental Response Fund, all the stats here from 2005 to 2011 in your files, Chair. Representative Anderson?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I see on here that you have received money from the Petra Fund, indeed, and so forth. So this is helpful. It looks like it goes back just to, I think 2004 is the last one. If it's possible, if you can get me the data going back to 1997 and beyond, that would be helpful. And I know you probably don't have that with you today,
yes.
But when you do have that, if you could send that to me, I think that would be helpful. And then this is maybe for staff. I'm just wondering... what has, if other counties have received this kind of authority besides Hennepin, if there's any history on that at all.
Mr. Chair,
Michael,
I think...
we have a Ramsey County now and also Hennepin. Are there other counties that have a fund such as this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, I cannot... There were proposals and requests from Dakota, Anoka, St. Louis. I'm not sure if there, and maybe Washington. I cannot remember. Those were in bills. I don't believe that they were ever enacted into law, but they were in bills, I believe, that even were vetoed by Governor Pawlenty. But I don't think they were ever enacted. So multiple other counties have requested this, I think several times, as a matter of fact.
Commissioner, do you know off the top of your head how many counties?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to go back and answer the question. We did not enact, although the legislation was passed in 97, because we didn't have all of our ducks in order, we wanted to know how we could get exactly what you wanted. We didn't enact the legislation until 2003. So that's why the first project out of the box was 2004.
Representative Anderson? Okay. Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if in these cases, do you go back to the polluter and try to get compensation from the polluter first? I noticed in the, I can understand there's some of these where they're judgment proof and they're not around to get anymore. But the Shalom East Campus in St. Paul that got $147,000 was a former Coke Fuels, Flint Hills Fuel Distribution Center, and we know they're still in business. So I'm wondering why the fees are paying for remediation of the site and not the polluter.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, what we are trying to do is recoup every dime possible. I believe the one with the Shalom home, there might have been also some Port Authority involvement in that property also to try and remediate the Coke site. So we are trying wherever possible to achieve those dollars from any polluter possible. I go back to the days when the Ecolotech on the corner of Front Street and Jameson, where they disappeared, yeah. And there was no place to find the dollars. But the thing of it is, we are doing everything to hold the developer of the property to access every recourse before we put any money in. So we're only the tail end. We're not the beginning.
Representative Hartman.
Thank you. So do you know in the Shalom East Campus case whether Coke Fuels or Flint Hills paid any money for remediation of that site or whether they were pursued by Ramsey County attorneys?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair. Denise.
Chair representatives, I'm Denise.
Why don't we get a couple chairs up? There's chairs there. Commissioner, if you want to grab one too, there. Okay. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
My name is Denise Begbedir with Ramsey County.
Okay. To the Hartman question.
Yes, to Chairman and Representative. The City of St. Paul worked with them for many years to remediate the huge number of parcels that were affected by contamination. In the case of Shalom, it's my understanding that the property was initially remediated to industrial standards or to a lower level than is required for housing. And so the IRF funds were used really to help them do the additional remediation necessary to make it suitable for housing construction.
Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to thank Representative McFarland for bringing this bill forward. If you've noticed, I've got Arden Hills and New Brighton, both in my district, have seen the benefits of this program. And, you know, when we're looking at some of these legacy contaminants, the New Brighton Exchange, for example, you're looking at an old refinery, an old asphalt plant, an old unlicensed dump from some development in other parts of the metro area. And in a lot of ways, districts like mine and sort of a ring around the cities, you see the impacts of a time when we didn't have very strong environmental laws. And you see these sort of legacy contaminants impacting the development and redevelopment of those cities. And I probably have as many Superfund sites in my district as anyone in this body, and the biggest one included. And so I think these are really challenging redevelopment projects, and they take a lot of different people at the table and a lot of different pots of money. And to have the county have this ability to bring a chunk of money to the table to help make these things happen is really important. You look at the City of New Brighton, you've got the US EPA, you've got DEED, so a grant program that we fund at the state, you've got GO bonds, and you've got the Environmental Response Fund. So you've got almost $10 million to get this thing cleaned up. And that was, you're looking at the methane VOC, you're looking at an old dump site. You're not quite sure who to put online for paying for that. I mean, the old refinery there and the asphalt companies, they're still working on some of those agreements in different parts of this piece of property in New Brighton. And so I hope members see this as what it is, a really well-functioning, important kind of workhorse program that we have in Ramsey County. And I think my city would still be kind of trying to figure out how to develop a big chunk of land at, frankly, an intersection of two major freeways in our metro area. And we have a really big chunk of land in the city next door, in Arden Hills, that we're thinking kind of the same things about. But, you know, the New Brighton Exchange, formerly known as the Northwest Quadrant, has been a 20-year process of getting it cleaned up and redeveloped. And so we're reaching the light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak, and I think the Environmental Response Fund is an important part of that, and I appreciate Representative McFarland bringing this forward, because this to me is just about the basics of cleaning up and revitalizing our communities, and especially in that sort of first to second ring suburban area of the metro where there is, I think, a history of these sort of challenges and needs to be kind of creative in how we address them. So I just wanted to thank the author for working on this.
Thank you, Representative Knuth. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first of all, I just want to thank Janice Rettman for her enthusiasm about this program. I'm a fan of Janice Rettman's. But my question is, do either the City of St. Paul or Ramsey County commit any general fund dollars to pollution cleanup? Or is this completely something then that they have pushed off of their own sort of funding priorities?
Commissioner?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, in terms of pollution, okay, solid waste is one thing, but pollution, no, we don't.
Representative Brundeck.
Okay. Well, thank you. You know, I guess my concern is the proliferation of new ways to find fees and to find taxes. And it seems to me if jobs and redevelopment are a key priority of cities and counties, especially in the inner cities, that it would be a priority in their budgeting. And I think we can't ignore and challenge how well these funds are being spent. Nobody challenges that. But I think the question is, what, you know, where should the money come from, and should it be really another new tax? Because if you can do that, you can find another new tax, I'm sure, you know, further down the road. So to me, it would be really nice to say, no, we don't need to have this tax renewed.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, at the risk of saying a personal opinion, I'm about as fiscally conservative and as much of a fiscal watchdog as anyone, and I know you are too, Representative Runbeck. And one of the things that I think we all are trying to do is make sure that we get a bang for the buck. And this is, we've had this since 03, actually 97, but 03. And when I find something that works, you'll see me here. You're not going to see me on a regular basis, because I truly agree with you. There are that I want to stand accountable for what we're spending money on. And the environmental cleanups, you know, is we do a lot on solid waste in terms of diverting from the landfill, in terms of getting wood waste back to things, but we don't get into the environmental cleanup. And that would be a hard sell to do it when we have so many responsibilities that we are endowed by our creator, the legislature, to do.
Whoa. Whoa. Well, how do you argue that one?
I'm sorry. I think
no. Representative Bisgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Rettman, on your handout, you have a line in here that I'm really curious about, that the IRF funds have helped create a total of over 1,100 new housing units, right? And then you mentioned that 34% are workforce affordable. How do you classify the other 730 new housing units that this fund?
Commissioner Rittman?
Mr. Chair, what we were trying to show there is that we wanted to make sure that we were doing some affordable housing for the workforce that generally are having some type of assistance or some work plan for something like this. And so we were trying to make sure that we were doing a mix of affordable housing and not ruling out doing great housing. Again, this is developers doing this, and many of our projects have like 20% affordable housing, and that is often called workforce housing.
Representative Bisgins?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess it's got to be some definitional thing that Ramsey County is using, because I'm not quite sure. You know, if we say 34% are workforce affordable, that would mean, of course, that 66% are not affordable by the average workforce. And I'm kind of wondering where those houses are.
Mr.
Commissioner?
Chair, in other words, they're market rate.
Summit Street.
The other, they're not Summit Street. I don't have a Mr. Chair, I have nothing.
Yeah, he's got one.
Summit Street doesn't even exist.
Representative Bisgins, you're on the floor, sir. Representative Downey and Kiffmeyer, then we'll, unless there's other questions, we'll get to folks that have concerns about this bill that cleans up the environment for our children and grandchildren. Commissioner? Or excuse me, Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if this is for the testifiers or staff, but I'm curious, does the tax actually apply to commercial transactions, or is it just residential?
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, this applies to all mortgage and deed transactions. So there are a few exempt transactions under the state mortgage registry and deed tax that also would be exempt under this, but by and large, it's all transactions.
Representative Downey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and then again for staff or the testifiers. What other mechanism, this is a follow-on, I think, a little bit to Representative Rumbach's question about why not general funds, and I'm curious whether or not there were other funding sources and why a deed tax was the preferred mechanism as compared to some other possibility.
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, that you would have to ask the proponents from Hennepin and Ramsey County who proposed this back in the 90s, and the legislature enacted it. I'm not sure what the thinking was about the nexus between, you know, taking out another mortgage or making a real estate transaction and pollution. I think it was just a convenient way that they saw that they could raise revenue to pay for these costs. But, you know,
if we could go to the commissioner who was here when basically the Downey question, what was the reasoning for the funding source?
Mr. Chair, the reasoning is we had, and I won't speak for Hennepin counties. I'm talking about Ramsey County. We had 2,000 acres that we want to get back on the tax rolls. This gave us a leverage point, Mr. Chair. This was all about leveraging all other dollars. And that was the impetus. And that's why what I was trying to update you on is we took that literally is to be last in.
Representative Downey?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just make a comment. I question this thing a little bit. It seems to me the biggest beneficiary is the city in terms of having 2,000 more acres back on the tax roll, which translates into revenues at the city or the county, wherever the property is. Another beneficiary would be the developers and the owners of those properties for the long term, and the people paying for it aren't any of either of those folks. I guess you might be able to construct some logic that says as citizens in the county or the city, those folks who paid the tax are somehow indirectly beneficiaries. But it seems to me that if the biggest beneficiary are the units of government that actually collect the taxes, and that's really the return on investment that you talk about here, that maybe Representative Runbeck's suggestion that a general fund appropriation might be better, or if there really is this kind of return on investment, maybe you could actually sell shares in an IRF fund and then return a nice investment to the investors in that. If there's the kind of return on investment of 10-to-1 and things that I've heard about, I might actually be interested in investing in that. So anyway, just some ways to think about it that are different than the current mechanism. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Downer. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And some of those same line of questioning, it says on the Ramsey County page here that the tax was put on most property sale transactions, and so not all but most. Could you tell me what is included in the current property sale that this deed tax would apply?
Mr. Michael, to the statute.
And
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kiffmeyer, I think that I can't speak for what the county was talking about, but I assume that they're talking about the transactions that are exempt from the mortgage registry and deed taxes under state law, which there's a list, you know, for the mortgage registry tax. There are about actually 15 exemptions for things like partitioning. So if two co-owners partition a property, that's not subject to the deed tax. There are exemptions for sheriff sales and so forth, and I suspect that's what the county's referring to.
Commissioner, is that correct?
Mr. Chair, yes, sir.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could just get a list of what those are, that would be helpful. And I think along the line of the questioning, I think so far that's sufficient. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kiffmeyer. Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'm looking at a bill from Representative Lanning in March 28th of 2006. I was trying to remember this, and Ms. Sen was able to go find it. Representative Lanning had a bill to have a mortgage and deed tax on the whole state. Yes. To pay for housing for the whole state. And it's just one example. Many legislators bipartisanly have tried to use this tax for all kinds of purposes, and not just in two counties, but for the entire 87 counties or for state needs or whatever. And I think the questions that are being raised, and like what Representative Downey was saying, I will admit I have never been a fan of the mortgage and deed tax. I mean, to say that people are buying and selling homes and buying and selling businesses are the people who should pay for the things we need, to me it should be a general tax, or you give the counties a little bump in their levy authority or something. But, you know, that's neither here nor there for today. Because I think what they're trying to do here is really understandable. My recollection, and I was asking Representative Marquardt, is I think we put in 5 counties or 7. I see Mr. Schreiber's here. He probably remembers 2 in the conference committee. And the House fought it, actually, and the Senate wanted it. We ultimately agreed to, I think, 5 counties, and Governor Plenty vetoed it. And he said, these new ones are new taxes, but the old ones, they're okay. So we put the old ones back in for Ramsey and Hennepin. He signed it. Okay, so, I mean, this was sort of like what meets the no new taxes thing. I mean, because Hennepin and Ramsey had them. Governor Plenty said he was okay with keeping them going, and I think that was 08. But he wouldn't do the new ones. So, I mean, just, you know, these things get accelerated into these tax debates. But I just wanted to put it out there for people to think about, because I think the good that comes of them is why Representative Depke is carrying the next bill and why Representative McFarland's carrying this bill, is to deal with these things that people don't want to pay taxes for. I mean, they're literally dumps. I mean, Representative Knuth just walked through. You know, who's going to go out and vote for a tax increase for that? It's like trying to pass a jail. I mean, nobody. But they're stuck with it. So they have these Superfund sites. And I guess one thing I would say, you know, just thinking about it, and I don't like the tax, Representative Downey, but one thing I have often thought about this program is, our constituents actually are beneficiaries, because when, let's take our county, when all this stuff comes back in the tax rolls, our constituents who are not recipients of all these sort of formulas, we pay less into the pot because LGA goes down as the properties come on the tax rolls. And I would love to see Hennepin or Ramsey someday give us an analysis, which I don't see in our handouts, of how many millions of dollars of value has come onto the property tax rolls, so that the whole value of, say, Hennepin County or Ramsey, therefore our constituents pay less into the LGA pot and, you know, kind of all the pots. But I agree with you where it's coming from, and, you know, I don't know how you get your head around this, Mr. Chair, but these two counties are in a tough spot because this is their funding mechanism, and I think the mortgage indeed is the wrong one. But they've just said, let's extend it again. Can you just extend it again? And that's sort of like Representative Mahoney before with St. Paul. But I'd love to see. Maybe it's Mr. Hines someday can give us the analysis. Representative Loon's another one. I mean, our constituents are paying more in taxes for these state-funded programs to help with tax base. And that if we could stop some of that, it would be helpful. So,
well, thank you, Mr. Lancheski. That's a perfect segue into the issue of how this is funded. We have some folks with concerns. I think we'll bring down our commissioner. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. My pleasure.
And Denise, you. Normally, what was your last name again?
Begbedir.
Thank you, Denise. So if we could go with the folks that have concerns, our good friends from the realtors, I believe. If you could please come down and present your concerns to the committee. And then, members, we're getting a lot of our questions out, I think, on the Ramsey County issue. The only difference I see is Ramsey County pulls the sunset like forever, and I think Hennepin County goes for a time certain. So, and that'll all be worked out down the road here. But if you please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Paul Egger with the Minnesota Association of Realtors.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Egger. Your concerns?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Yes, we are opposed to the two bills in front of you, the Ramsey County bill and the Hennepin County bill. And the committee has had a really good discussion and raised a lot of the issues that we would have brought forward. Just to get back to kind of the reason why this is in tax committee and not in environment committee, it's the tax policy, the funding mechanism for the environmental response fund. I've had an opportunity to meet Commissioner Rettman and the staff from both Hennepin and Ramsey counties. And they have really good stories to tell about the projects that have been completed. But ultimately, it's in front of tax committee because these two counties have the authority to levy an additional increment on top of the state mortgage registry and deed tax. That tax isn't paid by realtors. It's paid by buyers and sellers of property. And as you heard earlier, there are some exemptions, but even if you refinance, when you're registering a mortgage, you're going to pay this fee in these two counties. And we just fundamentally believe that for a program or for the outcomes that are being produced by these programs, it truly does benefit all of the residents in Ramsey and Hennepin counties. And to Senator or Representative Runbeck's point, if that's truly the case, then this should compete with other priorities in the counties. And, you know, we certainly understand the fiscal constraints that are on Hennepin and Ramsey. We understand that. However, it still comes back to the fact that we're singling out a very small segment of the populations in these two counties to foot the costs for the activities that are being delivered that truly do benefit everyone. Representative Lencheski mentioned the tax base increasing as a result of these programs. That's good for everybody in these two counties, not just buyers and sellers of real property. So, Mr. Chair, my comments are really appropriate to both bills. I don't think I need to get up again at the Hennepin after Representative Depke presents the Hennepin County bill. But one difference, as you alluded to, Mr. Chairman, with the Ramsey County bill is it does eliminate the sunset. We prefer that these two taxes are allowed to sunset. It has been 15 years since they were first implemented. But at a minimum, Mr. Chairman, if this does move forward, we would encourage you to continue to have a sunset in place for both of these taxes. Mm-hmm. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Egger, and we thank you on behalf of the realtors for that testimony. Any questions for Mr. Egger? Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And thanks to you and everything the realtors do. Okay, so I will renew my motion that House File 1113 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. Okay, with that, thank you, Representative McFarland, and to everyone that testified on this bill. Okay, I will move House File 1242, or excuse me, Representative Depke will move that House File 1242 be before the committee. Representative Depke, welcome to your committee. If you could please present your bill.
See if you get this working.
Yes. I think somebody here. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the Tax Committee. I'm the second leg of the presentation on the ERF fund this morning. I think the Chair outlined the significant difference between the bill that I am authoring and that in Ramsey County. There's some other things you're going to be getting, some information that's being passed out now that might answer some of the questions as far as percentage of what, how much of the taxes go to this tax goes to each one of the different areas in Hennepin County. Again, we are asking for the sunset to be extended to 2018. First of all, the EF fund, as you know, is used currently. There are many funds, obviously, on the environment, but in Hennepin County, this is the only fund that really goes to restoring contaminated properties at this point. It restores properties to the standards required for redevelopment, and that's really what this bill is all about, is redevelopment, which is not the focus of the intent of the other funding programs. Grants have been awarded to clean up sites over the last 10 years for about $37 million. The return on the investment of that has improved the development and the real estate value of these properties by $48 million, so that's not a bad return on their investment. The ERF is approximately 1/100th of 1% of the value. That's the ERF portion of the mortgage deed check is 1/100th of a percent of the value of the property, and currently 50% of the properties that are worked on are residential in Hennepin County, and so that equivalent is about $30 on a sale of about $150,000 for the property. This bill was brought to me last year by two of my cities and you'll see on your handout, by the way, before I get to that, is that there's a map on the back of the handout that I gave you that tells you, you know, why Hennepin County is charging this tax. And it's on your handout so you can take a look at it. Hennepin County has more than 19% of the state Superfund sites, 19% of the state's petroleum release sites, 41% of the state's voluntary investigative and cleanup sites, and that's the one that I'm going to be reading a letter from one of my mayors from, and 8% of the state's dump site, totaling more than 4,300 sites of concern. In this tax committee alone, there are six members on our tax committee. Sarah Anderson, Lyndon Carlson, Jim Davney, Connie Depke, Ann Lincheski, and Diane Loeffler, between all of those six legislators, 51 sites have been improved because of this ERF fund. I'm going to read to you just quickly a letter that was sent to me by my mayor of Excelsior. Through the EF program, the city discovered that a former dump site had elevated methane concentrations, which are potentially explosive if not mitigated properly. Given the elevated methane concentrations, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency required the city to mitigate and continually monitor the site. Without the availability of the ERF program, it is unlikely the city would have, first of all, known of this impending danger, and secondly, to be able to resolve the contamination issues. And I have a similar letter from one of my other towns as well. I would encourage you to extend this temporarily for an additional 5 years. I think that there are a lot of very good comments have been made about priorities and so forth, but I assure you that cleaning up and reducing contamination in Hennepin County is a priority and needs to be a priority. And I do have Commissioner Dan Callison here to answer any pertinent questions that you have to this bill. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Depke, for your presentation of House File 1242. Commissioner, welcome to committee. Did you want to make some comments, or are you here for questions?
I would like to make some comments, Mr. Chair.
Okay, please state your name and who you represent. Please, and I'm sorry, before we get to that, I want to just have members realize that I'm referring the following House files to the Property Tax Local Division Chair, Runbeck's Committee, House File 1890, 2563, 2583, 2613, 2686, 2689, 2699. I have no clue what any of those bills do, but they are now over in the Property Tax Division. Commissioner, please state your name for the record and who you represent, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jan Callison. I'm a member of the Hennepin County Board of Commissioners. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today, and I want to thank Representative Depke for bringing this forward. I have a short presentation. It won't take a lot of time. I hope that it will make 3 points. The first is that this is a successful program. It's been in existence for more than 10 years. The second is that everyone benefits from the cleanup and rehabilitation of these sites. And you've talked about the benefit to the county and the cities, the state benefits from property tax, individuals benefit from jobs, and neighborhoods benefit when these sites are cleaned up and removed. And finally, we're not asking for anything new. We are asking for an extension of existing funding stream, not a new funding stream. This first picture is an example of one of those successful operations. This is in the city of Richfield. It is City Bella. The property received $100,000 in Environmental Response Fund funding for petroleum cleanup at a former gas station and hardware store. The redeveloped property contains ground floor retail businesses and about 125 housing units. The site now generates more than $1.1 million annually in property taxes. You've already heard a lot about the Environmental Response Fund. It funds the evaluation and cleanup of contaminated sites. These sites often have existed for a long time. They have historical contamination. There is no responsible party. It includes dump sites, leak sites, and voluntary cleanup sites. The state statute established this program in 1997. This was to deal with the National Lead Site in St. Louis Park, which was a former federal Superfund site and is the site that's pictured. As you now know, it's funded by a mortgage and registry deed tax. The deed tax is 1/100 of 1% of the value of the property tax transaction amount and the principal. This is the equivalent of $30 on a $150,000 property sale. The ERF has received funding extensions in 2003 and 2008 from the state legislature, and we have awarded 264 grants, this is in Hennepin, totaling $37 million since 2001. It sunsets on January 1st, 2013, which means that this successful program for cleaning up contaminated sites will end. This fund leverages private and public investment. What we have seen in Hennepin County is that there's $1.7 billion in privately funded development costs, $53 million in public investment. And Representative Anderson, you had a question about this. This breaks down for the public funding as $21.5 million from DEED, $17.5 million from the Met Council, $14 million from the EPA and HUD. And as you heard Commissioner Rettman say, we seek to have this be the last funding source. We ask grantees to attempt to secure other public and private financing. The ERF increases property values and generates tax revenue. It restores properties to redevelopment standards. As a result, it contributes substantially to returning properties to market value sale and to protecting surrounding property values. And this makes it different from other programs, such as the Petro Fund. The ERF funds projects unlikely to be funded by other sources. And ERF-aided projects have resulted in a $433 million increase in property values. That's a 12-to-1 return on investment. And $48 million more in property taxes generated. Redevelopment of a contaminated site also can increase property values of surrounding properties, whereas the presence of a contaminated site can decrease surrounding property values. The ERF creates jobs and revitalizes neighborhoods. 9,500 jobs created or retained in Hennepin, 3,500 affordable, and 6,500 market-rate housing units created or renovated. It brings redevelopment and business to vacant properties, and it transforms sites from safety nuisances into community assets, reducing crime. This site is the Edgewood Business Center in St. Louis Park. The site has had a variety of industrial uses but had been vacant for more than 5 years. Potential developers did not pursue the site due to contamination issues. During vacancy, the property was the subject of more than 45 police calls, including those associated with a meth lab operating on the site. The property became a concern due to its proximity to an elementary school and regional trail. The site now contains 79,000 square feet of office and warehouse space.
Commissioner, yes. I'm up against the clock. How much long is your presentation?
I have about one more slide after this.
Okay, wonderful. I don't want to cut you off, but I do want members to have a chance to ask questions.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Mr.
Commissioner.
Chair. One other project, Dunwoody Flats, which is located on 18th Street East in Minneapolis, is the former site of Abbott Hospital and has stood vacant for 7 years. The building has become the target of vandalism and scrappers. The vandalism resulted in the spread of asbestos at the site, increasing the cost of cleanup. The site, which has some funding in place, will become an apartment building. And this is the last slide, and it's actually what Representative Depke pointed to as well for Hennepin County. We have more than 4,300 sites of concern in Hennepin County. Representative Depke talked about the number of Superfund sites and the other sites, but this is a significant program for us. I also have Brent Rogers, who's the Vice President of GRECO, available to speak as well.
Okay. I think we'll go to questions from members first here. I think the committee understands the program quite well. And also, for those that have concerns, I believe the realtors would have the same comments. And again, members, the realtors are great folks. They're not against cleaning up the environment. They have concerns about the funding source. I think we realize that. I think no one argues that this program is, I mean, these are both very good programs in both counties. The question is the funding source, and that's what will come from the wisdom of this committee. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, I'm wondering, can you tell me how the county determines what projects are going to fund? What kind of ranking system do they have, and how does that work?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, we ask for applications, and then we have a scoring system. Staff goes through and scores, so we look at the availability of other funds, making sure that we're the last in. We look at how the site will be reused. I think we look at the ability of the developer or the project proponent to make the project happen. And if I need some more criteria, if you want more than that, I can ask staff.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, could you also, and this is something that you can provide to me later, but if you could send to me the breakdown by city of the $37 million that has been allocated so far, that would be helpful to me to kind of get an idea of how that's been distributed among the communities within Hennepin County. Thank you.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, we have a very long chart we'd be happy to provide.
Okay, if you could provide that to Chair Anderson.
Absolutely.
Okay, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. I'm just trying to understand maybe some of the language here, and I saw in the Ramsey County proposal they talked about 34% or something like that being workforce affordable. So I'm wondering maybe the other 66% is afforded by people who don't work. I'm really confused by that language. But then I see in this Dominium They talk about 250 affordable artist apartments. I'm curious what that is.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, what we said is we have created 3,500 affordable and 6,500 market rate housing units. The state has a definition for affordable units, so when we talk about affordable, we're talking about the state definition, and I would not assume that people are not working who live in these units. They're market rate, they're simply affordable to people who have different incomes than those who need subsidized housing. For the Dominion Project, I'm not familiar with that. Would you repeat what your question is?
I think we're going to address Kelsey. That's Ramsey County. The letter you have from the Dominion Project.
Oh, there's a Hennepin County one too, Mr. Chair.
Oh, there is?
Same company.
Oh, okay. Okay. Thank you, Representative Driscoll.
It was 250 affordable artist apartments, Mr. Chair. So, as
Commissioner, about the artists.
Okay. Mr. Chair, we look at cleaning up these sites. We look at putting them back into useful property. If we've got a group of artists and they can afford the rents and it makes sense for the neighborhood and this project, then we fund that as well.
Thank you,
Driscoll. And I apologize for that. I hadn't caught the it wasn't as nicely done as the other one. It was just black and white. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Callison, just on the fund balance in your IRF fund, do you have that number? And, you know, I'm noting that the purposes for which your funding can be used are broader than Ramsey County, so recreation, transportation, or rail traffic. Do you have information as to sort of the breakdown of the spending and how much might be going to recreation or transportation?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, thank you. The balance in the IRF fund is $2.5 million. Our records show that 40% of the money has been spent in Minneapolis, 60% in the suburbs. We have not spent any on transportation, and I can give you a better breakdown in terms of types of projects later if that would be helpful.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a comment. I had emailed one of your letter writers, Mr. Gunsberry, and he was kind enough to answer me and said that of the money for his project, $844,000 came from DEED and $140,000 came from IRF. And, you know, I didn't go through every one to find out, but kind of struck me, the major funding sources for environmental cleanup are things like the Petra Fund, PCA, I don't know what they call theirs, pollution cleanup. And here we have DEED and this IRF fund picking up the project cost. So I'm just wondering where the bigger fund groups are.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, thank you. As I indicated, and the representative is correct, we have funding coming from DEED, we have funding coming from the Met Council, we have funding from the EPA and HUD. By far the largest amount is coming from private sources, and this is often the funding that makes the project happen. It's, as I say, the last money. It may deal with issues that aren't dealt with as directly by some of these funds, and so I believe without this funding, many of these projects would not have gone forward.
Thank you.
Okay. Before we get to our last question, and unless there's more, Commissioner, you've been doing a great job answering questions. Is there somebody that you brought with that just has to get down and testify, or are they resource people?
I do have, as I said, Brent Rogers, who's Vice President of GRECO, so he's somebody who's used this fund, and if that would be helpful, he's prepared to provide some testimony.
Why don't we do that if it's just very short? We want to get you on the record, and again, for the realtors, they have the same concerns on the Hennepin County bill as they do Ramsey County bill. Is simply the funding. Well, simply, it is the funding source. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Yes, thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is Brent Rogers with GRECO Real Estate Development.
Welcome to the committee.
GRECO is a real estate development company based in Minneapolis. We've developed or are in process of developing more than 2,200 units of rental and for sale housing. The great majority of these are in urban infill locations in Minneapolis. We currently have three new mixed-use projects under development in Minneapolis and St. Louis Park that couldn't have moved forward without being awarded ERF funds as part of the competitive application process. The ERF grant funding is instrumental in assisting redevelopment because of the brownfield nature of urban infill sites. The ERF grants help pay for the investigation and cleanup costs associated with redeveloping sites and buildings that have sat vacant for years. In many cases, there are no other sources of money available to help defray these costs, and there would be a major funding gap if these funds went away. These funds are used to remove contaminated soil on new construction projects and to safely remove and dispose of lead-based paint and asbestos in existing structures so that they can be repurposed, as, in our case, as housing. The Petra Fund and Superfund money does not aid in these types of redevelopment costs. The funds are of paramount importance in aiding in urban renewal and redevelopment process. As more and more people are interested in moving back to the city, more redevelopment is necessary. But it can't happen without cleanup sources like ERF. ERF directly benefits the general public by increasing the tax base and by creating new jobs. For example, in our three current redevelopment projects, we've been able to leverage approximately $562,000 of ERF money funds along with private investment to create over $82 million in taxable market value. According to our general contractor, these three projects have created or saved more than 300 construction industry jobs, and once they're completed and operating, they'll add more than 100 full-time positions. The cost associated with the ERF fund seems nominal compared to the overall benefit that these completed projects provide in their respective neighborhoods, and the economic impact of the redevelopment can surely be felt in the surrounding community. The ERF grant helps create vibrant neighborhoods and remove blight, in addition to increasing the tax base and creating jobs, which is why we hope you'll support the extension request and vote for its passage. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rogers. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to point out one thing that hasn't come up in the discussion and I think is really critical when we talk about, you know, these funds, leverage, deed, and other funds. Sometimes before you can even apply for those funds, you have to know what you're facing. And when you've got a vacant industrial property in my area, they're mixed in with houses. I mean, we have apartment buildings next to chemical factories. And, you know, I mean, that's the way development was done in the old days. And you live near your work. And so the neighborhood wants to get this building that's an eyesore and a crime risk redeveloped. You can actually, a developer isn't even going to look at the site till they know what the risks are. And the phase one study, which is just a preliminary assessment to try and figure out who did what manufacturing in that building, what chemicals might we find that we're going to have to deal with in the soils, that initial assessment often comes from this fund. Without that assessment, that building's going to sit there for the next 50 to 75 years because no one's willing to step up and take the risk without knowing something about what the history is of that building. And so that is a limited use of the fund, but it is sometimes the critical first step that gets anything happening. Because no one wants to touch a property that they don't know the history of.
Mr. Chair, we do have Commissioner Callison has one more testifier. If we have time, it's up to you, Mr. Chair.
1 minute.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, this is Scott Tangenhoff from Hillcrest Development. Thank you for giving him the time.
Okay. If a page could pass out the 30-minute presentation, it'll be done in 1 minute. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
I'd say good morning, good afternoon. Mr. Chair, my name is Scott Tankenoff.
Please spell your last name.
T-A-N-K-E-N-O-F-F.
Thank you, sir.
I'll be brief. My company is Hillcrest Development. We actually are one of the few groups as a developer that goes out and buys the buildings that looks like a bomb hit them. We are the people that go out and buy things that have been empty, polluted, whether they're refineries, battery manufacturing plants, paint factories, things of that nature. There's some pictures that are going around that show some projects that we've recently done. They're projects that have been done within the last couple of years, so they've been done during a period of economic turmoil. All four of these projects were successful. None of these projects could not have happened. They would not have happened without a grant funding source. The ERF program is a phenomenal program, and it is that last-in program, and it provides the niche funding that, candidly, you can't find anywhere else. This is about accountability. This is about jobs, real estate taxes, removal of blight, and removal of environmental issues that cause danger. In these projects before, there were maybe 30 to 35 jobs that were in these four projects. None of them, very few of them, if any, were living wage. Now there's 10 times more jobs. Again, it's about jobs, and tax base, removal of environmental conditions, and removal of blight. The real estate taxes in just the last 2 years have more than doubled. The blight issues with the property, again, these buildings look like a bomb went off in them. Nobody wanted them. They sat empty for a long period of time. Indoor issues, outdoor issues, people ran away from them. What we now have is businesses, people that are drawn to these properties. The neighborhoods are now experiencing a revitalization where there aren't any dollars having to go in from the public sector. They're buying them privately, and they're going forward, even in today's challenged environmental or economic environment. The environmental remediation, the circumstances before, they were hazardous. They weren't safe. They had serious indoor and underground issues. They're now compliant. They're compliant with environmental laws. They're desirable. They're safe. From an accountability standpoint, Hennepin County has a lot of good accountability checks and balances in place. They have good accountability, and we subscribe to that. We believe in that. Most cities, there was a comment that was made before in the Ramsey County testifying project that most cities could maybe budget for these funds on their own. I don't think that would be practical because many municipalities could never account for what kind of pollution that they would run into. You need a source like a county that's a little bit more of a macro source, in my opinion, to be able to do it. A smaller municipality could never understand it. They've got the staff, they have the people, and it's very professionally run. I don't testify much, and I'm reminded by my kids that I don't know much of anything. So the fact of the matter is I'm limited in my abilities. I'm an expert in one area, though. I buy things that look like a bomb went off on them that no one else wants. It's my chance to be creative and hopefully successful from a redevelopment standpoint. Not a developer, I'm a redeveloper. We've been in business for 64 years, going at 65 years, multi-generational. I know that this program is a good program. In challenged economic times, it's more necessary than ever before. I'm happy to answer any questions or be of help in any way I can.
Okay, if any members have questions, we'll need to take them offline because we are just a little bit over here. But Mr. Tanganoff, thank you very much. And if you want to stick around, there may be some questions. Representative Defke moves so that House File 1242 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. Members, sorry to do this on the time. I want to thank Ramsey and Hennepin Counties for their presentations and those others that testified. Good government all the time. We're adjourned.